Hi, I'm Jalal from the Victory Bus Project. You're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Every Friday on WGXC from noon until 2, check out the Sugar Shack Jukebox featuring decades of funk, R&B, rock, pop, soul, and much more. That's every Friday on WGXC after the noon headlines until 2 p.m.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Healthcare Consortium, a rural health network dedicated to improving access to healthcare and supporting the health and well-being of the people in our rural community. Throughout 2018, the Healthcare Consortium will be celebrating 20 years of serving the residents of Columbia and Greene counties. To learn more about the Healthcare Consortium and its services, please visit www.columbiahealthnet.org or call 518-822-8820.
Oh my God, honey, I just heard some terrible news. The radio station's going off the air.
Going off the air? How will I listen to my samba music? A 1, 2, 3, back, a 3, 2, 1, back, to the side, to the left.
Honey, you're an excellent samba dancer, but I think this is it for them.
Oh no, I just...
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned into All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, September the 24th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. The ground rules seem to have been set concerning the sexual assault allegations against nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Also on the Monday rundown, we'll take you to a state where more than 60,000 kids are chronically absent. And the rural digital divide is a twofold problem in Kentucky. Topping our news, the women who accused Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault will appear Thursday before the Senate Judiciary Committee, her lawyers said. The Wall Street Journal reports after days of haggling over the terms of the hearing, details about the event were still being hammered out Sunday afternoon between lawmakers and a lawyer for the accuser. Dr. Ford has said she believes Kavanaugh was drunk when she assaulted him at the age of 17. She was 15. The journal quotes Senator Dick Durbin as saying it's certainly relevant to the whole conversation. There have been a lot of things about alcohol that was consumed by the judge, as well as by others in high school. That has to be part of any relevant questioning. While North Carolina school systems work to make the most of limited funding, a new report highlights another vulnerability in education: not showing up for class.
The NC Early Childhood Education Foundation report says more than 64,000 public school students in pre-K through third grade were listed as chronically absent in the 2015-2016 school year. Mandia Bleidinger with the foundation explains why the research focuses on younger ages.
It really matters for third grade reading. We know that third grade reading influences kids' short-term academic outcomes and also longer-term life outcomes. There are things that can be done to address chronic absence.
The report highlights school system practices that support attendance, from reward programs to partnerships with community groups. About half the school systems in the state participated in the survey. The state and federal governments define chronic absence as missing 10% of the school year for any reason. This is Stephanie Carson reporting.
Last year, the General Assembly in North Carolina passed a law encouraging districts to adopt a student attendance recognition program to help focus on the problem of chronic absence. Tomorrow's National Voter Registration Day. Catherine Davis Young's been talking with voting rights advocates who are hoping to see some strong civic engagement across the state of Arizona.
Arizona broke its voting record for a primary this August with about 33% turnout, or 1.2 million voters. But even with a record showing, that means the majority of Arizonans still didn't cast ballots. And Diane Brown with the Arizona Public Interest Research Group says, as the November election approaches, there are at least a million eligible voters statewide who haven't registered.
To put that in perspective, if you combine Mojave, Yavapai, Pinal, and Cochise counties, you get approximately 1 million Arizonans.
Brown says democracy works best when more people participate. Arizonans have until October 9th to register, but she says Tuesday's National Voter Registration Day is a great opportunity to remind friends and neighbors to prepare for the upcoming election.
And federal legislation that funds resources for victims of domestic and sexual violence is set to expire at the end of September. More from Eric Tegetoff.
Attorneys General, including Montana's Tim Fox, and groups across the country are urging Congress to renew the Violence Against Women Act. Agencies and organizations in Montana have received more than $70 million through the law since 2005. It's directed more than $6 billion nationwide since the bill was enacted in September 1994. Robin Turner is with the Montana Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence.
I really can't overstate the importance of the 1994 Violence Against Women Act. It was the first comprehensive federal legislation that was designed to end violence against women, to end gender-based violence.
And it includes a provision that closes the so-called boyfriend loophole by prohibiting dating partners under court protective orders from possessing firearms. And finally, Mary Sherman reports the internet is, of course, an essential tool in the daily lives of many Americans. However, Kentucky's challenges in closing the rural digital divide are twofold.
An estimated 22% of Kentuckians have access to two or fewer broadband providers in their area. And the Kentucky Wired plan to ensure high-speed access in every county is behind schedule. Tim Merrima with the Center for Rural Strategies explains another struggle will be ensuring that once folks are up and running, they're not shut out.
A lot of us are concerned about access, and it's critically important for rural areas. But while we're working on access, we need to remember that rules like net neutrality are what make the internet a useful tool for all of us in the future.
He explains net neutrality kept the internet free and open for all by prohibiting companies from creating slow lanes for specific content. The FCC voted to roll back net neutrality last year, and Kentucky recently joined nearly two dozen states fighting that decision in federal appeals court. A recent poll found a lack of high-speed online access is a serious problem for 24% of rural Americans, compared to 13% in urban and 9% in suburban areas. Merrima says rural schools, hospitals, and businesses depend on the internet to connect with resources outside their communities.
Broadband isn't just for entertainment. It's critically important the same way that having a good water system.
A survey found 86% of Americans disagree with the repeal of net neutrality, including a majority of Republicans and Democrats. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for starting your week, News and Cruisin' with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
National Weather Service in Albany predicts Monday should be mostly sunny, with a high near just 59 and a low around 49 overnight, with showers likely Monday night, 60% chance. Tuesday, occasional showers are also possible, with a high near 63. 1 to 2 inches of rain are in the prediction for Tuesday. More showers Tuesday night with a low around 62, and more rain on Wednesday, showers and possibly a thunderstorm. Cloudy skies, high near 71, a low around 52. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative community radio.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Pink Zebra, the company that allows you to fragrance your personal space with special sprinkles created from scented soft soy wax. They do home parties, events, one-on-one shopping, and more. Information about Pink Zebra is available at area code 518-567-9420 or online at pinkzebrahome.com/sprinkles from Lacey. Pink Zebra. Change your fragrance. Change your life.
Next, we have these reports.
The Million Strong Solar Campaign held a press conference at the state capitol on Tuesday to urge the state to double its solar target to 1 million New York households by 2023, including 100,000 low-income households. WOOC correspondent Mark Dunley filed this report.
Erin Mayer, who is an environmental justice leader and also the former president of the Sierra Club.
Thank you, everybody. Number one, when we look at where New York State can be vis-a-vis the nation, it is kind of embarrassing. This is a no-brainer. This is the state that gave rise to the New Deal. This is the state of FDR. This is the state of jobs. But more importantly, the Capital Region is the capital of electricity. We have the electric city called Schenectady. So why isn't the Capital Region and at least the upstate New York economy number one in solar? The answer is, at the end of the day, we're still battling the oil industry, the carbon sector. We're still dealing with the transport and providing supply lines for natural gas. Natural gas is not a bridge fuel, it's a dirty fuel. And New York right now needs to follow, in fact, beat California. California's economy is as diverse as New York State. Here we have an opportunity to, again, 2023, 1 million, good, we can do better. We can do better. We're just reforming our building codes, getting DHCR involved, getting our economic development involved. Look, we got the test with the Buffalo billions. We want to see that billions now into packages that actually build, as I say, microgrids, solar grids, and things that we need right now. These are clean jobs, green jobs, and you cannot rebuild and retool our economy on the back of mixing solar and dirty energy. It's either one or the other. And so right now we're asking to go 100% clean, 100% renewable. We want to go from 12 to number one. Number one in jobs, number one in installation, number one in building codes, number one, again, leading the nation forward. Again, this governor has come off a very significant victory. But hey, we got Tish James coming in as our AG. And so as our state AG, she can go after the carbon and dirty carbon sector in the Ohio River Valley and hold them accountable for poisoning our air. Because number one, not only is going solar, going clean, and going for clean and renewables, but it is the number one health remedy with regards to asthma and upper respiratory disease, of which our state is upwind from. So going solar makes not only economic sense and sound sense, it makes sound public health sense. Invest in New York, invest in the future. We want to go 100% renewable. We want to get those million homes by 2023, but can we go 2 million, 3 million? Can we reform our codes, all of our codes, so that we push this economy and make this state leapfrog from 12th to number one? I believe in New York. This is a jobs bill. This can put New York to work. And again, let's do this. We got Senator Breslin and we got Assemblywoman Fahey. This is the capital region. This is the electric city region. This is the region that can power New York back to number one. Thank you.
We have Gina Cassati, the regional sales senior manager for Sunrun. Guzek, Thomas, I know you're here. I talked to you earlier. Thank you for joining us. Thomas is the managing general partner for Solar Park Energy.
Correct.
Do you want to come down here?
Sure. Community solar developer, concentrating on western, central, and upstate New York. And all we build is community solar. Only about 25% of homes and businesses throughout the state can adopt solar on site. So it's very important for us to meet the kind of challenges of a million strong or 30 by 50 to make sure that community solar is in effect a growing industry. We have some exciting projects. We're ready to open up about 14 megawatts of power in western New York, which will provide about 2,500 customers with community solar. This is to small businesses as well as community members, and we're working on low to middle income customers as well that will be serviced by that. Our biggest challenge, and we have a lot of projects in the system, is that we need some minor tweaks and modifications to the solar laws that are in either local municipalities, but more so in the state legislature and the state senate. And those are areas where if we can pass minor modifications, I know that we can grow the community solar package immensely in upstate New York.
Not least, we have Carl Robigo, the executive director of the PACE Energy and Climate Center.
All right, thank you very much, and it's great to be here. PACE has been working on clean energy for New York, the region, the nation, and around the world for about 30 years now. We're just finishing our 30th year of work. Back when I first went to PACE to study environmental law while I was teaching at West Point, we only dreamed that we would be at this point now where people could say, I want solar, it would be economic, technical, and basically popular. We were trying to lay the foundation in those 30 years ago when we started talking about environmental externalities and the need to account for the pollution that current conventional fossil energy sources produce and that clean energy alternatives can avoid. Work on that foundation continued from that time. I was at the Department of Energy when we got President Clinton to announce 1 million solar roofs for the whole United States as a goal. That led to the Sunshot Initiative, which kept driving prices down, made solar more available and recognized across our country. After you set a good foundation, you have to announce goals. Goals focus executives. Our chief executive should announce the goal because he's got a complex and deep staff working for him that can realize those goals if he'll step up and make it the culture of New York that we're going to have high goals and we're going to aspire to achieve them. And then that leads to the third thing that's most important right now that we're all here to work on is execution. It's not going to be enough to say we want 1 million solar roofs. It's not going to be enough to say we want 100,000 of them on low-income households and housing units. What we have to do is follow through. We have to make sure that our dreams become a reality, and that's where his Public Service Commission, where the legislative bodies, where everyone in New York can pitch in and make that goal a reality. I'm excited to be here and call for the goal. I'm even more excited to expect the execution that's going to come from it. Thank you, everyone, for laying the foundation.
Sean Guerin with Vote Solar. You know, the point of this campaign, obviously, at the high level is to achieve getting enough solar power on the ground to power 1 million homes and to serve 100,000 customers, low-income customers, with cost-saving solar. But beneath that, we actually wrote two roadmaps, one specific to that 100,000 low-income customers and one to the 1 million solar customers. And we really actually laid out the platform of policies that need to be in place. But, you know, fundamentally, you need the direction of a strong goal. You need fair compensation that pays solar developers and solar customers a fair rate for their electricity. You need good policies at the local level when it comes to property taxes and siting and making sure that we're protecting our land and hitting our state's clean energy goals simultaneously. And finally, you need to make it easy for people to make this choice. So everything has to be simple so customers can get it. You know, the utilities have to work with developers so that they can plug their projects in fast and at a relatively affordable rate. Those are some of the policies that are needed to get there. So first you set the goal, and then you put us on the path to get to a million solar strong New York.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you for organizing this today. I guess I am here mainly to serve an example of the strong job contribution that the solar industry creates in New York. I actually was a former high school teacher for about a decade in the U.S. and abroad, and I switched careers and started very much at the bottom level three years back, I'm currently, I sold solar, I lead generate for solar, I work with the ops side, I basically have a good taste of the whole residential solar industry, and I'm just here to basically let you guys know that that solar creates good, affordable jobs with affordable salaries and benefits, which is very important to me. I actually moved here from the Midwest, where from a region where we've seen many, many good jobs disappear in the last couple decades. So it's really important to me that I work for a strong company that is creating jobs all the time, and we really need state support to make that continue. So
that was the Million Strong Solar Campaign, a coalition of industry, climate, and community groups urging the governor to increase the state's goal to put more solar panels on homes. Presently, solar only provides 1% of the state's electricity needs. The report was filed by WOOC correspondent Mark Dunley.
Here's a new album, Hudson, from the band Hudson, which is Jack DeJohnette, Larry Grenadier, John Medisky, and John Schofield. This is the song Hudson from the album Hudson by the band Hudson.
Sharon Jones of Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, and you're tuned to WGXC 90.7 FM Accra.
Fridays on WGXC are made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kurt Trumbull of Babylon, New York. Sustaining supporters like Kurt are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
Tune in for special programming all week on WGXC. Tuesday, Michael Wilde's Mostly Single show listens to folk oddities at 7 p.m. Then the Battlefield Earth show follows. Wednesday, on the WGXC morning show at 9 a.m., Sandra Altomare, the Home Ownership Center Manager for RUPCO Incorporated, discusses the nonprofit housing agency's grant program for Greene County low-income first-time home buyers. Then at 9:30 p.m. on Wednesday, current Wave Farm artist-in-resident Clara Liu brings a dance party to the 90.7 FM airwaves. On Thursday at 10 a.m., we interrupt normal programming for the U.S. Senate hearings with Christine Blasey Ford and Brett Kavanaugh testifying before the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee through a broadcast through Pacifica Radio. 7 p.m., the Overlook Show looks over the work of Sonny Chirac, and there's an extra web stream Thursday night at 8 p.m. from Hilo and Catskill with Catskill's Rodney Allen Greenblatt performing his electronic music from his new album. Friday on the Hudson Valley Sound at 2 p.m., local musician Ben Smith is featured. Saturday on the Framework Show, Thomas Park is the featured artist. This week on 90.7 FM, WGXC. This is Tom Rowe with a WGXC News Update. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org to find out more about anything you hear here. Patricia Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that the Ulster County Legislature voted 15-7 September 20th to ban single-use plastic bags in most retail outlets. The bill needs a public hearing and a signature from Ulster County Executive Michael Hine before it would become law. The Bring Your Own Bag Act would make stores charge 5 cents for a recyclable paper bag for customers who don't bring their own reusable bags. And it would fine stores that violate the law when it would go into effect July 15, 2019. Restaurants located outside of grocery stores, supermarkets, convenience stores, food marts, pharmacies, and dry cleaners would be exempt from the law. Environmental groups back plastic bag bans to protect whales, birds, seals, turtles, and other animals that mistake the bags for food, such as jellyfish. The retail industry opposed the bans because of added costs. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Daniel Zuckerman reports for Columbia Green Media that the Cairo Chamber of Commerce will most likely be shutting down at the end of the year after a last request for help from the town board September 19th. Chamber officials asked the town board for financial help at the Cairo town meeting this week. Quote, "That's not a proper function for us," unquote, town supervisor Dan Benoit said. Quote, "We just can't hand them money," unquote. The chamber will close after their annual harvest festival on October 6th and the Christmas in Cairo parade November 25th, unless someone or some organization helps out. Quote, "It's time for other organizations to step up to the plate. We're all tired," unquote, Executive Director M.A. Tarpinian said. Quote, "I wish them all well," unquote. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Amanda Purcell reports for Columbia Green Media that while the Germantown Town Board voted unanimously August 7th to do away with the police department, voters will decide if it goes away in a permissive referendum November 6th. Resident Tim Oddie got 73 signatures on his petition to bring the issue before town voters. Quote, "Everyone I have heard from indicates there should be some form of community-based police, although what shape or form that is differs," unquote, Oddie said. The vote to disband the town police department followed a June 26th assessment report by retired state police superintendent Harry Corbett, who recommended shuttering the Germantown police, citing numerous deficiencies. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. National Weather Service in Albany predicts Monday should be mostly sunny, with a high near just 59 and a low around 49 overnight, with showers likely Monday night, 60% chance. Tuesday, occasional showers are also possible, with a high near 63. 1 to 2 inches of rain are in the prediction for Tuesday. More showers Tuesday night, with a low around 62, and more rain on Wednesday, showers and possibly a thunderstorm. Cloudy skies, high near 71, a low around 52. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative community radio.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
Next, we have these reports.
This is the WGXC Congressional Report. Stories about the New York 19 Congressional District from the past week and Representative John Faso and his Democratic counterpart Antonio Delgado and other candidates in the race to be the representative in New York's District 19. This week, the 538.com website currently reports that John Faso votes with Donald Trump's positions 90% of the time. 538.com also currently predicts that Faso has a 44.9% chance of winning re-election and rates Democrat Antonio Delgado at 55.1% chance of winning.
Laura Namias and Bill Mahoney report at Politico that despite complaints from Representative John Faso that Governor Andrew Cuomo is behind the Antonio Delgado campaign, Cuomo has done virtually nothing to help any of New York's Democrats challenging Republicans in House races this fall. Politico reports, and I quote, through the end of July, the most recent date for which federal spending reports are available, the state party, controlled by the governor, hasn't reported making any direct contributions to any of the Democrat House candidates in this cycle. Its federal committee filings show no independent expenditures and no coordinated expenditures, end quote. The governor said a year ago about the Republican representatives, and I quote, I charge Congressman John Faso and Chris Collins with violating their office to represent the people of New York State. Our message to Leader Pelosi is this, we stand to fight with you, and the fight to take back America starts in New York and starts today, end quote. But while Cuomo and Faso have had Twitter wars over the past year, the governor is not actually working to get Delgado elected in his place. In August, Cuomo formed a federal political action committee called Cuomo New York Take Back the House and donated $2,700 to Democrat Delgado. Cuomo spends that amount on his own campaign every 80 minutes during the primary. Two anonymous congressional campaign officials tell Politico that Cuomo has had either none or very little contact with their campaigns. New York Working Families Party Executive Director Bill Lipton said, and I quote, for 8 years, it's been a lot of sound and fury, and it hasn't signified very much. Executive Director Bill Lipton said, and I quote, it's been a lot of rallies and press releases and nothing of real significance, end quote. Read the full story at Politico's.
A busload of Democrats came from New York City to Kingston September 15th to canvass and make phone calls for Antonio Delgado in his election against incumbent Republican John Faso in New York's 19th congressional district. Faso, on Twitter, seemed upset about that fact. Quote, our campaign relies on New York 19 volunteers, whereas Antonio Delgado is busing Democratic socialists up from Manhattan. Speaks volumes. We need a congressman who fights and makes a difference for New York 19, not New York City interests, unquote. There is no evidence from Faso or anywhere else WGXC could find that the bus was full of, quote, Democratic socialists, unquote. The group Vote Blue 2018 put the bus trip together, and according to their Facebook page is, quote, dedicated to illustrating the reasons why we need to turn Congress Democratic in the November elections. Help end governance by sabotage, unquote. Faso's claim seems to be, at the least, a large exaggeration.
The Daily Freeman is reporting the Appellate Division of the State Supreme Court Third Judicial Department ruled September 17th that independent congressional candidate Diane Neal's name can appear on the November 6th ballot. The decision overturned a lower court ruling that Neal's petition for an independent line on the ballot lacked sufficient signatures. That lower court ruling affirmed a determination by the State Board of Elections. The appeals court sided with Neal's argument that the invalidation of her petition should be dismissed because she was not properly served notice of the petition's deficiencies. Neal, a Hurley resident, said in a statement issued by her campaign, and I quote, "With this behind us, our campaign restarts in earnest immediately. We're excited to be back on the ballot, and we're not resting until the polls close on November 6th, end quote. This makes Neal one of three candidates looking to unseat first-term U.S. Representative John Faso this fall, along with Democrat Antonio Delgado and Green Party nominee Steve Greenfield. Neal's name will appear on the Friends of Diane Neal line. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Former Democratic congressional hopeful Gareth Rhodes announced September 18th the launch of Show Up 2018, a new organization designed to drive voter turnout in the November 2018 midterm elections. The occasion was marked by the release of an original video, the Kaplan Twins of Instagram fame. Show Up 2018's strategy is to produce social media content aimed at attracting the attention of votes from millions of Americans who sat out last midterm elections. Rhodes, the group's executive director, said, and I quote, "By choosing non-political voices to reach the tens of millions of Americans who do not generally engage or show much interest in electoral politics, Show Up 2018 is taking a unique approach that we hope will motivate voter turnout in this critical midterm election," end quote. Between now and the general election, Show Up 2018 will share stories from Americans of all walks of life, illustrating in short and simple videos how various policies affect real lives. A Pew Research study earlier this year showed the U.S. trails most developed countries in voter turnout, with just 64% of voting-age Americans registered to vote in 2016, far below other democracies, including Canada and the U.K. and Sweden. Read the full press release at showup2018.org. Many groups are releasing congressional ratings for representatives ahead of the midterm elections in November. The Arts Action Fund 2018 Congressional Arts Report Card gave Representative John Faso, the Republican from Kinderhook, an A rating. He got the high grade mostly for signing several letters with other representatives saying they were against cutting funding to federal arts programs and for participating in the 2018 annual Congressional Art Competition. The American Civil Liberties Union, on the other hand, gives Faso an 18% rating. Faso voted against curtailing government spying on Americans and voting for a mass deportation bill that would expand mandatory detentions of immigrants. Faso is running against Democrat Antonio Delgado in November. The NRCC released another attack television ad against Delgado September 18th. Like the other ad, this one is more a negative music review of Delgado's 2006 hip-hop album that distorts his lyrics, claiming Delgado's songs are against the war on terror and minimize the 9/11 terrorist attack. Dan Friedman is reporting for the Times Union. A massive bipartisan opioid bill working its way through Congress includes a measure on Medicare Part D prescription drug coverage written by U.S. Representative John Faso. Faso's bill, the Medicaid Opioid Safety Education Act of 2018, would require the Department of Health and Human Services to include warnings about opioids and alternative options for pain relief in the online introduction to Medicare that seniors view when signing up. Faso said his proposal is intended to help seniors to understand the threat they face when doctors prescribe opioids for pain relief. Faso said he was, and I quote, "shocked," end quote, to hear that 30% of prescriptions written under Medicare Part D were for opioids. He said, and I quote, "That's a big number. The potential for abuse is not just among the young and middle-aged, but the elderly as well," end quote. The Opioid Crisis Response Act passed the Senate September 17th on a vote of 99-1. The measure must be voted on again by the House before it is signed into law. Faso said that vote could come next week. The drug addiction crisis took 72,000 lives nationwide in 2017. 12% more than in 2016. Opioid addiction takes the lives of 150 people a day, according to one estimate. According to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, New York ranks 22nd nationwide in opioid overdose deaths, with a rate of 15.1 per 100,000 population. Read the full story in the Times Union. William J. Kimball writes in the Daily Freeman that while Representative John Faso, the Republican of Kinderhook, votes with Donald Trump 90% of the time, he says, and I quote, he can stand up to his Trump-allied campaign contributors if Special Counsel Robert Mueller reports that the president has broken the law, end quote. Faso says, and I quote, I'm not influenced by the campaign donation. I appreciate the support I received to run an election, but I'm my own person, and I will make decisions by what I think is in the public interest and nothing else, end quote. Over the years, Kimball says, Faso has received campaign contributions from Vice President Mike Pence, Trump's media lawyer spokesman Rudy Giuliani, U.S. Representative Devin Nunes, U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, and Trump. He said, and I quote, I said right from the beginning that Mr. Mueller should complete his investigation and let the chips fall where they may. We don't know what he's going to conclude. Obviously, he's making progress on his investigation, but I'm going to wait and see what he says, and I'm going to wait and call it as I see it at that point, end quote. Faso's opponent, Antonio Delgado, would not criticize the congressperson on this issue. Delgado said, and I quote, I don't have a window into John Faso's mind, end quote. Green Party candidate Steve Greenfield says there is already enough evidence to impeach Trump, but then says, and I quote, I believe that John Faso actually could weigh the Mueller report without his donation sources being the principal influence on how he's going to feel about that, end quote. Despite Faso not agreeing with him on the impeachment evidence. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Andrew Solander reports in City and State that three-fourths of the donation to John Faso and Antonio Delgado, the major party candidates running in the 19th congressional district election this November, have come from out of the district. A third of their fundraising totals, Delgado has raised $2.7 million and Faso $2.3 million, comes from outside New York State. But Delgado only gets 7% of donations from political action committees, and just over half of his donations are over $1,000. Several employees at his former law firm, Akin Gump, have donated nearly $200,000 to him, which is the largest single group donating to the Democrat. By contrast, 35% of Faso's fundraising comes from PACs, and 50% of his contributions are over $1,000. Faso has received $271,000 from the financial sector, his largest source of money. Diane and Robert Mercer, the billionaire backers of Steve Bannon and Brexit hedge fund manager Daniel Loeb, and three members of New York City's billionaire Tisch family are Faso's largest contributors, according to City and State. Delgado said, despite the amount of money he has raised from outside the district, and I quote, the only people I am beholden to are the people right here in our district, end quote. Delgado also is not quite truthful, saying, and I quote, we have taken a pledge not to take any corporate PAC money, unlike my opponent, John Faso, end quote. Faso's campaign would not comment. Read the full story in City and State. Laura Namias and Bill Mahoney report at Politico that despite complaints from Representative John Faso that Governor Andrew Cuomo is behind the Antonio Delgado campaign, Cuomo has done virtually nothing to help any of New York's Democrats challenging Republicans in House races this fall. Politico reports, and I quote, through the end of July, the most recent date for which federal spending reports are available, the state party, controlled by the governor, hasn't reported making any direct contributions to any of the Democrat House candidates in this cycle. Its federal committee filings show no independent expenditures and no coordinated expenditures, end quote. The governor said a year ago about the Republican representatives, and I quote, I charge Congressman John Faso and Chris Collins with violating their office to represent the people of New York State. Our message to Leader Pelosi is this, we stand to fight with you, and the fight to take back America starts in New York and starts today, end quote. But while Cuomo and Faso have had Twitter wars over the past year, the governor is not actually working to get Delgado elected in his place. In August, Cuomo formed a federal political action committee called Cuomo New York Take Back the House and donated $2,700 to Democrat Delgado. Cuomo spends that amount on his own campaign every 80 minutes during the primary. Two anonymous congressional campaign officials tell Politico that Cuomo has had either none or very little contact with their campaigns. New York Working Families Party Executive Director Bill Lipton said, and I quote, "For 8 years, it's been a lot of sound and fury, and it hasn't signified very much." Executive Director Bill Lipton said, and I quote, "It's been a lot of rallies and press releases and nothing of real significance," end quote. Read the full story at Politico. From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Sarah Tapton reports in Columbia Green Media on the reaction to the Greene County legislature's vote on September 19th to build a new Greene County jail, the most expensive project in the county's history. The legislature voted 10-4 in favor of a $39 million measure this week and plans to take $8 million in reserves to partially pay for construction, interest, and other costs that opponents say will top $70 million. Climax resident Claudia McNulty said, and I quote, "It's an outrage," end quote. Mary Finneran of Cairo agreed. Finneran said, and I quote, "It's a shame, a travesty," end quote. "This will destroy Greene County. We can't afford the debt," end quote. Obviously, the legislators voting yes disagreed. Coxsackie's Charles Martinez said, and I quote, "It turned out just the way I expected. We need a jail in Greene County," end quote. Cairo's William Lawrence, who led the charge for the new jail, agreed with Martinez. He said, and I quote, "It's a logical conclusion to the jail project concerns. We've tried to hear everyone's concerns and adopt our thinking to that point of view. I see no better solution, as ugly as it may seem," end quote. Wyndham's Lori Torgerson voted against the bond, and she said, and I quote, "I'm profoundly disappointed for this county that I love and the people who live here. This is the single biggest mistake I've been involved with in my entire career. We had an incredible opportunity as leaders to save taxpayers from this expenditure and to do better for criminal justice, but we squandered that opportunity. I wish there was something that could stop this project and give us another chance to do better," end quote. Catskill's legislative team split on the bond vote, with Lori Overbaugh and Matt Lovera voting to move the facility out of Catskill, and Michael Bulich and Kevin C. Lennon voting against the measure. Also voting for the measures were Cairo's William B. Lawrence and Harry A. Lennon, Hunter's Larry Gardner, Greenville's Kevin Lewis, Athens' Lee Palmateer, New Baltimore's Patrick S. Linger, and Coxsackie's Thomas M. Hobart and Charles Martinez. Wyndham's Lori Torgerson and Durham's Adrian O'Connor Jr. were the other no votes. The legislature has been previously considering a much cheaper proposal to share a facility with Columbia County. Torgerson said some local residents are trying to add a referendum to the ballot to overturn the decision. The State Commission of Corrections will approve or deny the project within 60 days, and construction will take at least 2 years. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Chris McKenna at The Fray reports that Representative John Faso, the Republican of Kinderhook, is one of 8 House Republicans working to extend the Violence Against Women Act after it expires September 30th. Faso wants just a 6-month extension to allow time to negotiate a longer compromise extension on the 1994 law that provides money for programs meant to prevent and address domestic violence and sexual assault. Congress has reauthorized VAWA 3 times since 1994, but House Republicans did not take up the measure this summer. Faso said in a press release, and I quote, "VAWA programs are instrumental in increasing awareness of domestic and sexual abuse, improving services and support available to victims, and enhancing law enforcement training in response to these crimes. For the safety of our communities to continue protecting and supporting survivors, we must not allow VAWA to expire. This 6-month extension of the legislation is critical, and I remain committed to working with my colleagues from both sides of the aisle to pass a long-term reauthorization," end quote. Faso and 45 other House Republicans had sent House Speaker Paul Ryan a letter last week urging Republicans to pass a bipartisan reauthorization bill. Read the full story at The Fray. Woodstock radio station WDST 100.1 FM pulled the National Republican Congressional Committee ads bashing Democrat Antonio Delgado from its airwaves this week, calling the ads, and I quote, highly offensive and factually distorted, end quote. Delgado is trying to unseat Representative John Faso, the Republican of Kinderhook, in the November election. There are two NRCC anti-Delgado spots airing over and over on social media and local television and radio stations. They're more music criticism than political think pieces, focusing more on a hip-hop album Delgado released 12 years ago than on any of his political opinions, and have been called racist by some. Gary Chetkoff, WDST's president, wrote on Facebook September 20th, and I quote, while we try not to impose censorship restrictions and while we do support the free exchange of ideas, even those we do not support, we believe that these ads are highly offensive and factually distorted. Therefore, after extensive conversation with our FCC attorneys, in order to understand our right not to run these political ads, we have decided to discontinue these advertisements, end quote. Political observers suggested the NRCC may complain to the Federal Communications Commission about the decision. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, wgxc.org.
Monday, there are special sounds on the radio. Tune into some classical music at 11 a.m. and noon. John Adams' Harmonilaire, 1985 composition, at 11 a.m. And Lincoln Mayorga playing 2 hours of classical sounds at noon.
We desperately need truth all the way.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Agra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a rogue.